a recession yet. Plenty of other forecasters are, and
so really say the American economy has reached the dreaded R.
No one's whispering about the R word anymore. Now, they just come right out and say it.
The probabilities of a recession have remained
unchanged. America's already in a recession.
The U.S. economy will slip into recession this year.
They think the government has failed them.
Coming live from the dungeon, from our quarantine hold up, I guess. Got the newest edition of the Genius Talks.
So we're gonna have a conversation today with y'all, with the whole world, about what to do while we in this coronavirus quarantine money-making opportunity situation. Are you going to make money in the markets during coronavirus? Or are you going to fail in the markets during coronavirus? Ball in your court. So what you think people should be investing in, Mr. Park?
I don't know if it's actually an investment opportunity with the volatility in the markets as far as traditional like stocks, because you never know where the actual bottom is gonna be. So instead, I would definitely contact some type of professional about the possibility of buying different options, maybe the Forex and the futures market. Because that's where your biggest investment opportunities are going to be. Options, you know, standard. You got your puts and your calls. You know, your calls are, you know, betting that the stock price is going to go lower. Your puts are saying that your stock price is going to go higher. And, I mean, it's kind of like equal opportunity at this point, because the stock markets are taking such a big hit, losing down to 30% from the high, that, you know, you don't know whether or not that was real or was it fluff, you know.
Now, when we say investments could be stocks, futures, options, Forex exchange, it can be buying apartments, buying single family. It can be investing in a new business, acquiring a franchise. Whatever the case, whatever the investing is for you, you know, this is what this talk show is about, to find a solution and see where we at in the markets. Now, I was looking at CNBC the other day, and they were interviewing Mark Cuban. You know, big shout out to Cuban. You know, he sent us an email and said we got a potential chance to be invited with him, you know. So hopefully that ends up manifesting. But Mark Cuban and another gentleman that was interviewing Mark Cuban, I don't actually have his information right now, but they were talking about the S&P gainers. And I'm going to give you all a list, especially for you guys that tuned in to check out the Genius Money Talk Show with Mr. Parker and Mr. Henry, making it happen. So, the gainers that I end up pulling up wasn't necessarily real big gains, but it did pretty well. It was Occidental Petroleum. They gained at 3.05%. While everybody else was falling off, that's what they gained at. All right. Kabat Oil and Gas, they gained at 2.65%. If you see the trend there, gas and oil has been the top two gainers in this situation. So maybe energy is going to be very, very important and valuable at these times. You know, so we can think about the past, how energy succeeded, and we can think about what it possibly do in the future, even if you don't get in on energy, on oil and gas at this moment, during this event. Now, third was IPG Photonics. IPG Photonics, coming in at 1.34%. And the rest of them, you know, they came in, but it wasn't that they're still in the negative as well, too. But they are the gainers. Now, that's amazing. We're in amazing times where the gainers were in at negative. What you think about those few stocks that I just mentioned, Mr. Park?
I mean, you have to look at the individual, like, today and in this next probably 2 weeks to 30 days is going to be about the individual stocks and looking at, you know, the products that they have, the management that's already in place, and then looking at, you know, the real fundamentals of what they actually do, and then the contracts that they have in place. A lot of the petroleum, oil, you know, shale companies that are gaining is because they have, you know, good real estate plays or land agreements to the drill, so they're not as affected by the low oil prices as other companies. You know, a lot of the other, you know, the big, you know, big operation companies, Chevron's and Shell's and BP's, and, you know, even the other, you know, natural gas companies, Chesapeake, they have high debt service, they have, you know, high production costs. You know what I'm saying? Whereas Occidental and Sand Ridge and some of these other companies that have gone through, you know, near bankruptcy or even bankruptcy, or who've had older land plays where they've used, you know, horizontal fracking and, you know, other, you know, advanced technologies to extract the oil, then they have a means of lowering their cost, so their break-even point isn't as high. And then, like I said, they don't have a high debt service, so, or they have lower dividends than other, you know, other companies, because that's what we get into during this time, is a lot of these companies have a high dividend load that they have to extract cash. Even if they're not making the most profit, they still, you know, want to keep in on the dividend. So, you know, that presents a whole nother problem when their revenues fall, because, again, the price of oil, you know, the price of a barrel of oil, you know, recently fell under $30 yesterday, and that's for West Texas Intermediate, and then it followed, you know, the Brent, which is the European standard. It fell under $30 yesterday as well. So, I mean, we're in unprecedented times, you know. And as I was saying to someone else yesterday, we're not having an economic crisis as far as earnings. What we're having is an economic crisis as far as revenue and what we're actually spending our money on, you know, has shifted drastically in less than 2 weeks. So there are going to be some companies that are going to miss their revenue targets. You know, strong companies, strong products, strong management, but they're going to miss their revenue targets because, you know, we haven't actually been spending money, or we go to, you know, we're using less transportation, we're using, you know, less products, we're not going out to eat, we're not, you know, and, you know, of course, you know, there have been people that have been defying the orders to shelter in place, and see that San Francisco actually shut down the city for the next 3 weeks, and, I mean, it's something that's coming to other parts of the nation pretty soon. And I saw somewhere they're saying that Trump may invoke the Stafford Act so that, you know, he can institute a mandatory quarantine for 14 days or maybe even longer. But, you know, I don't think that that would be an American thing to do. So I shudder to even think that he would actually, you know, like, consider that. But we also have thought about, you know, and they've instituted some of the principles that have already been taking place over in Australia and New Zealand. And I coined the hashtag cash for Corona. And what they're now considering is, and it's funny because I spoke about it about 10 days ago on my Facebook, but now they're saying that they may do something like give every adult American $1,000, and then for those who have dependent children, they would give them $500 per child. And I think that that is going to be a solution, you know, for, you know, some of the revenue crisis that we're going to have. Because, again, for most poor people who don't have but $400 in savings, an average of $400 in savings for a type of emergency, this might have took them out, you know. Then you got the schools closing. So now, you know, for those that have kids, you know, those kids who are home and are bored, not in school, don't have a, you know, a real, you know, program that they on, they eat more, you know. So if you got to spend an extra $200, $300 because you got three kids at home for an additional week or 2 weeks and you ain't got but $400 in savings, you might be looking at, you know, actually being like broke, going under. And, you know, if you work in the restaurant industry or any of the gig, in, you know, gig economy, you may not be actually receiving any income at this point. And I know that they're talking about expanding unemployment insurance and, you know, other things like that. But, I mean, even with that, if you figure, you know, the maximum unemployment is like $275 a week. Well, that ain't getting it for a family of four. You know, if it's you and you got three kids, then, you know what I'm saying, you facing the possibility of going under. So I think that this coronavirus has caused a reckoning. And I feel like it's a worldwide reckoning of how much it shows how much we are consumers and not necessarily producers or manufacturers or distributors, you know, as a whole. We've gotten to the point where the ownership of the distribution and manufacturing is concentrated in so few people that the wealth is and it's like a microcosm of the wealth being concentrated into the hands of so few people because they've taken control of the distribution and manufacturing networks. And so this has to be a time for those of us who are in the service gig economy to actually assert ourselves and become back part of, I mean, maybe the distribution network to start, you know. So if you got, you know, skills where you drive for a living, you may want to look into seeing if you can get your CDL, you know, even if it's just your Class B license. Because that's going to be coming out of this, whatever it is, you know, they have a term that they say is a recession. Well, a recession is two consecutive quarters of negative growth. Well, like I say, normally it's based upon earnings. But this is going to be a negative growth in revenue, which, you know, revenue is the actual cash flow as opposed to earnings is your profits. So, you know, it's going to be something slightly different than recessions of the past. And I actually coined the term reception. And, you know, it's a whole new word. You know, it's a R-E-S-E-T-I-O-N instead of R-E-C-E-S-S-I-O-N. Recess means to draw back. Reset means to start over. And I think that that's what we're going to have to take advantage of, is the rules have changed on us so much in the last 4 years since the Republicans and Trump took over in office. They've shifted the mandate from a consumer or a working environment to a corporate environment. And that's where we've got caught holding the bag, or they pulled the rug from underneath us, because we've always used our work as our backbone for our economy, as opposed to finance and corporation as the backbone of our economy. Especially we in the POC, or people of color community, we've always used our businesses as our job, but not as a means for us to finance, you know, corporations that own assets. You know, we've got caught up into owning our houses, owning our businesses, owning our cars, when in reality we should have corporations that own those things, and then us be the owners, shareholders of those corporations.
Our trust.
Well, trust is, you know, a whole different set of, you know, a whole different layer. And, you know, people get scared of terms that they don't know, or how they don't know how those things operate.
Because you want to really, even owning shares in the company, you want to own your shares. Your shares want to be held in a what?
And they you want them to be held in the trust. However, again, one step at a time, because, yeah, you know, people aren't totally familiar with the LLC, but, you know, everybody wants to appear as though they know. But at the end of the day, the LLC is like a baby entity.
And then even if they're using the LLC, they should still, at least, even though we know that the LLC dwarfs corporations, they should still be at least a multi-managing LLC, versus a single managed LLC. But it, because it's harder to pierce your corporate veil, I mean your LLC veil, if you have multiple managers. And stop listing yourself as the presidents and the CEOs and all this stuff, claiming ownership. See, the whole point of it is, what's the Rothschild way? What's the wealth way? Own nothing and control everything.
And Mr. Henry took the words out of my mouth, and it's actually a principle that John Rockefeller actually came up with. And he said, you know, I want to own nothing but control everything. He said that, why would I only want to profit off of 100% of my labor when I could profit 1% off of the labor of 100 men. And, you know, when I think about that, I want to be able to create 100 corporations, and everyone should, you know, have as their goal that during their life they create 100 corporations, because then you can be the shareholder in all of those corporations. Whereas if you're only relying on your own labor, that's the only source of income that you're gonna have. You know, I mean, you could go out and get, you know, property and, you know, all of those things, but the main measure of wealth is through investment in business. You know, even your house that you live in, unless you're using that house to make income, it's a big ass liability, you know. So, and again, these are the things.
Now, what if your house is paid off?
If your house is paid off, but you're not using it for business, it's still a liability, because again, you got to maintain it, you got to manage the upkeep. If the rent, I mean, if the heater or the AC unit breaks down, it's still a liability. You know, even if you own it.
Yeah. So basically, what you're saying, you all you have is equity.
Yeah.
But it's still some form of a liability.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably the closer you're going to get to a liability and an asset, but what Mr. Parker is saying is if it's not generating cash flow and revenue, then it's
a liability.
It's a liability.
You know, like...
On your books, on your profit and loss statement sheets, it won't appear.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So
Yeah, equity is one thing, and if you...
Now, if you savvy, you might throw in 2-3% appreciation growth or something on you. You know what I'm saying? But that's
still an unrealized gain unless you go to sell it. Like,
right.
Until you sell it, it is still essentially a liability. Like,
right.
You know what I'm saying? Because, again... If anything happens to that house and you're the owner, then, or if somebody falls in your house and now they sue the homeowner, you know what I'm saying? Then now it's definitely a liability, or, you know.
But technically, you should be paying your trust anyway. So
right.
It should be cash flowing in some shape or form.
Right. Now, like I said, we can't jump into, you know, the trust thing, because again, that's
you're taking it too far.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's you know what I'm saying, and these talks are centered around us being able to talk about, you know, financial principles, but at the same time, I definitely realize that, you know, like I say, I got people who are stuck in the real of, I want an LLC as opposed to a corporation, just for the fact of the double taxation principle. And, I mean, to be honest, it makes my skin crawl when I hear people say that, because especially with the rules that have changed around the tax liability that comes from corporate income as opposed to individual income, and them changing the tax rate, the real tax rate on corporations to be lower than that of, you know, of an individual, you know, of employees. In the situation where you get to your corporation making $100,000, $200,000, $250,000, then it only makes sense because it makes dollars.
But now, how about this now? Is it fair that the corporations won't pay employees to their into their corporation, or either into their trust. They only allow the income to be basically paid to an employee because you filled out an employment application, and if you did and you wasn't able to put a company name or a trust name down there, mm-hmm. and that income is considered given to an individual, an employee.
And that's again where we have to educate ourselves, especially those of us who are in the gig economy or in the distribution economy. You know, I've seen where a lot of, you know, my friends and family even are into the lasso teas and, you know, these diet teas, and they're now distributors for those, and, you know, they derive their income from, you know, being distributors of those teas or getting people to join as distributors. So now they get, you know, performance bonuses and those type of things. Well, I hope that all of you who are in that have, you know, set up your corporation so that now that corporation pays your corporation, and then you use that revenue, because this is always the key. Revenue always trumps profits, because as long as you have profits, you will always be able to get, you know, I mean, as long as you have revenue, I'm sorry, and please let me, you know, correct that. Like, as long as you have revenue, that means that you're eligible for different business lines of credit, and, you know, you always be given, you know, opportunities, you know, because you have revenue coming in. You know, Jeff Bezos, who is the majority shareholder in Amazon, was not profitable for 20 years. Mm. But he was always able to obtain lines of credit because he had revenues no matter what. He was always selling and receiving money from selling, you know, whether it be books or goods, or, you know, he was always receiving revenue. He may not have been profitable, but eventually, you know, the creditors could see that as long as he had that revenue, eventually he was going to be able to build the infrastructure that would make himself profitable.
Do you think that he personally, purposely tried to make his company not that much of steady gains, but steady?
Nah, I don't think it was, you know, by...
I mean, because when you really think about it, though, his company is probably still a less of a risk than someone going out, than a company that has to acquire all this equipment and have more physical. He just got into having really that many physical employees, mm-hmm. because of his shipping and everything. Other than that, you know, he was... I mean, it's a website.
Yeah.
It doesn't take as many people to run a website as it takes.
Yeah, he didn't have to invest in infrastructure as much because, again...
Exactly. That's the term I'm really looking for.
The infrastructure is the internet. And that's what we failed to capitalize on.
So how did he break... How did he not have gains?
It's not about not having gains. It's just that, like I say, the revenue has always been constant and growing, because the more I can sell, you know, the more I'm receiving a percentage from those that are selling on the platform that I created. So, one, that's, you know, service revenue. All right. But I also am taking goods that I may make a profit on, but the shipping may make it so it's not profitable. And so until I can build a shipping infrastructure, which means now I got vans, now I, you know, to do the delivery, now I got planes that can, you know, fly between cities, now that I have the logistics, the beltways that can, you know, efficiently move packages from planes or cargo containers to trucks, you know, until then I got to use the networks of other people, USPS and UPS and FedEx, you know, so they're charging me a premium, you know what I'm saying? Because again, I'm, you know, holding up their service. So as I can move from just using their services or paying for their shipping into me either hiring my own employees or hiring my own contractors who can then do it at a rate that I can negotiate, you know what I'm saying, at a lower rate than what I would have to pay to FedEx or UPS or U.S. Postal Service, then that's when I start to move into more of a profitability. Right. So, you know, whereas last year I might have spent $400 million to USPS because they're doing air cargo for me. Now I'm going to lease a fleet of planes so that now my most popular spots, I'm flying between those spots every day. So I got a route, I got my own route from Atlanta to Seattle or from LA to Atlanta or from LA to Kansas City or Seattle to Chicago, you know, so that now I can just set up distribution points where my I can do my own shipping. So we have to be able to take advantage of, like I say, it's a recession. It's not a recession. It's the paradigm is going to shift from this. And I think that there's going to be a change in where we receive and manufacture our goods as well, because I think that this has shown that China can be unreliable because, again, they're always, one, governmental influences on how they distribute products and how they manufacture products. And then there's environmental issues that they have that they don't take as seriously the environmental impact of their shipping and manufacturing. They create concrete and other, you know, dangerous. They still use a lot of coal, way much more coal than we use as far as clean energy. And so, you know, environmental pandemics are more prone to be hit in places like China and Southeast Asia, you know, Vietnam, Philippines, all of these different places, because again, they don't have the infrastructure of creation of products for a clean energy disposal. You know, they're starting to use more petroleum, but, you know, for a large percentage of the country, they use coal, you know. And so this pandemic has shown that, okay, if we can introduce an environmental, you know, hazard to say, okay, we want y'all to all stay home because, again, this thing is a communicable disease that can be spread rather quickly, and it comes from your lungs, from people actually breathing on you. So we want you to stay home, you know, and that shut down a large portion of their manufacturing sector, because again, these people are having to transport or go to these different manufacturing plants, and, you know, they might be right outside of the city, but, you know, yeah, I saw an interesting fact of when this pandemic hit and they introduced what they call their version of social distancing, that the pollution in cities like Beijing and Shanghai and Shenzhen, China, and even in Wuhan, where this actually was introduced, they said that the air pollution or visibility rates increased by 92, or, you know, the pollution decreased by like 92%. And that was just from them getting people to stay home for 3 days in a row. And, you know, that made me realize that this is something that, you know, could be introduced as a measure to, you know, kind of make China sit their ass down, you know, as far as them becoming the preeminent manufacturing realm. So now it's just gonna be a whole shift in the thinking of, well, is it really cheaper for us to manufacture over in China, or could we bring that manufacturing home, cut out a whole measure of shipping costs and, you know, environmental factors, and say, hey, we're gonna produce everything here in America or here in the Americas, you know, whether that be, you know, our Caribbean nations, our, you know, our South American or Central American nations, you know, Ecuador and Belize and San Salvador and all of these different places where, you know, El Salvador, I'm sorry, where, you know, they have poor workers as well, but they could be much closer, you know what I'm saying, as far as shipping costs, and then we don't have to worry about, you know, these Supermax tankers having to sail across seas and then go through the Panama Canal or the new canal that they done built, you know, to get to the West Coast. Or, you know, even from, you know, the opposite direction. So all of these things are causing a reset. And I feel like this is going to be a shift into a situation where we as the descendants of the slaves can actually now gain our 40 acres and a mule, but not have to go through the process of maintaining land in order to get our inheritance. We could actually be the distributors, we can be the manufacturers, we can be, you know, the producers in this economy, and we need to do that through the corporations and not, you know, getting excited by personal ownership. So that's kind of my thoughts on this coronavirus and how we need to take this time, you know, even with our kids. I think that that's the silver lining of these things, is we can stress the importance to our kids that school isn't the most important thing. It's actually being able to take care of yourself and your family. So if you got kids, especially if they 8 to 12 to, you know, 15 in that range, you need to be able to spend time with them and impress upon them the fact that they need to, this shows them that they need to be starting their own business. Because again, the school can be taken away from them. You know what I'm saying? Like, literally, it's, you know, some reports that they may close school for the rest of the semester, you know, or at least for 4, 6, 8 weeks, you know. And yeah, education of, you know, principles and history and math and all of that is good, but if your kid can't make no money, you know, and all they got is, oh, well, I'm going to go to college so I can get a good job, a lot of those jobs are going to go away. So if you can, you know, have your kid gain a skill like coding or, you know, software engineering or whatever that may be, you know, then you want to go ahead and take this time while they're out of school and they in your face and, you know, y'all y'all actually are having, you know, parent bonding time, parent and child bonding time, then take advantage of that. You know, teach them or find out what their interest is and how they can turn that interest into a business. You know, some of you have kids that are very artistic. You know, they know how to draw, paint. You know, they know how to make music, or they know how to cook. You know, these are skills that, like they say, can pay the bills. But not only that they can pay the bills, they can actually incorporate them so that they can make a business. They can acquire, you know, different, you know, businesses to say that, hey, I can start employing people. I can start employing my friends. You know, we can start us a landscaping company when we 12, 13, 15 years old. And now I got a crew. And that's what we do is, you know, we got us some equipment. We start going around cutting yards. You know what I'm saying? We start doing horticulture, growing plants. We get into agriculture. We growing food. You know, like, all of those things are what's going to be necessary for this society to, for us to compete. And like I say, this is the time that we need to focus and say, okay, you know, this is this reset. Well, the people who are the hustlers are gonna be the people that are gonna profit from this reception, like I say. So I want everybody to, you know, think about, you know, what's going on. You know, if you're struggling, you know, through this time, or you suffer from a loss of income, or, you know, an increase in bills, or whatever. Even if you have a job and they've done the right thing and said, hey, well, we want y'all to work from home, you know, you still want to create a situation where you can do what I call incorporate your hustle, because now you're going to have more time to incorporate that into your daily life, whether that means you selling lashes or selling hair, or you do hair, or, you know, even for the hustlers that's on the black market, you know, again, with the changing of the laws surrounding, you know, recreational drugs and, you know, other activities, you want to incorporate yourself. You want to, you know, all of the money that you make goes into a corporate bank account. You know, not necessarily that you got a DBA or even an LLC, because, again, those things are always attached to you. You know, whereas you can always separate yourself from your corporation. So, you know, that's kind of the talk for the day. I'm going to probably be introducing a new podcast. It's going to be Minus the Bullshit, you know.
Minus the Bullshit.
Yeah.
And
it's going to be, you know, talking about how, you know, we do and we talk a lot of business, but we also have a lot of bullshit. And it keeps us from getting to the money. So I want to incorporate that into a new series of talks, and it'll be more about pop culture. You know, I'll talk about different events and, you know, different, you know, things that have gone viral that have to do with money, but show you the bullshit that, you know, keeps it from making dollars make sense. But we're going to go ahead and close that out for the day. And this has been the latest of the Genius Talks. The coronavirus. #reception. Like I say, R-E-S-E-T-I-O-N. So, we'll go ahead and close that out.
I don't think it's closed.
And with that, we out. It's a recession. Nah, it's a recession. Everybody broke. So I just came back to give everybody hope.